Okie dokie, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live from WILL AM 580 in Urbana, Illinois, Campbell Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. We've got a show we've been working on for a long time coming today, and we're still working on making our connection with Patrick Coburn, the columnist, the reporter for The Independent. He is in Iraq. We're calling him on a cell phone. I know that sounds like a Hail Mary pass with the lights off in a night game, but we do think we have some confidence that we will be able to get through. Possibly my producer, Andrew Boyle, is working on it. If not, if we can't get through to Patrick Coburn, we will eventually get him on, maybe on a taped program when we can get a more secure line. We have, I think, the strongest bench in talk radio history because waiting by to talk to us if need be, if we can't get a hold of Patrick Coburn, will be John Stauber, a frequent guest of ours here in Media Matters and the co-author of Sheldon Rampton of a brand new book on exactly the same topic we'd be talking to Patrick Coburn about, Iraq and what's going on there today, what it means for us here in the United States and what the truth is on the ground there. John Stauber is co-author with Sheldon Rampton of the brand new book, The Best War Ever. But while we wait here, Andrew Boyle is furtively working the phone lines trying to make connection. I think we're going to be switching to John Stauber. Let me thank you all, listeners, right now. Take a moment to tell you about the pledge drive we did 2 weeks ago. You know, we do these a couple times a year. They're very important for WILL AM 580, for all of public broadcasting here in East Central Illinois, and important for this show. And we had our record performance. I'm delighted to say we had 125 people call in. We raised, I believe, nearly $12,000. And I think for the entire public radio setup, the goal was $175,000. So our one program alone raised, I'm doing the math quickly in my head, but roughly 7% of the total that was raised in both AM and FM over a 5 or 6 day period. So I'm really proud of you. I'm honored for the support, and that's why we're trying to do programs like this one with Patrick Coburn from Iraq, one of the leading journalists in the world covering the Middle East, to get original commentary. But we're very fortunate that we have a tremendous guest who we knew this might possibly take place, a tremendous guest waiting in the wings from Madison, Wisconsin, John Stauber, someone I think many of our listeners are very, very familiar with. He's been a guest in the program several times because he's an author of numerous books with his running mate, Sheldon Rampton. And they have a brand new book out now, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damned Lies, and the Mess in Iraq. And for anyone who's familiar with John Stauber or his work, you know we're going to have a terrific show today. In the pledge drive a couple weeks ago, we had four premiums, and I know that many of you selected one or even two or three. Some people, I think, even went for all four. We will get those to you as quickly as we possibly can. We are going to get those out as soon as we can. It might be a couple weeks, so I do hope you will bear with us while we get the books collected and process the orders. It is quite a bit of work for us to do all those arrangements. And again, the support you're giving us has been tremendous. And it's really energized us here. Andrew Boyle, our producer, the people at WILL AM 580, like Jay Pierce, Brett Polson, our engineer, to do our best to make this show continue to deserve your success. And for those of you out in podcast land who also graciously donated, we had our first burst of podcast donations, 12 to be specific. We're hoping to increase that quite a bit. And we'll be playing up that up quite a bit more. But with no further ado, I'd like to go to our guest now, who is joining us on the phone from Madison, Wisconsin. John Stauber is the co-author of the brand new book, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damned Lies, and the Mess in Iraq. John is the author of numerous other books, including Weapons of Mass Deception, Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Banana Republicans, and Trust Us, We're Experts. He is the founder of the group, the Center for Media and Democracy, publisher of PR Watch. It's a pleasure to welcome him to Media Matters. John Stauber, welcome to Media Matters.
Thanks, Bob. It's always great to be on your show.
Well, it's great to have you here. And for our listeners to know, we actually had John scheduled to be on in, I think, was it 2 weeks from now?
I think so.
And 2 weeks ago to talk about the book. So we're having a special benefit getting you a couple of weeks earlier. And our guest was going to be, coincidentally, or actually not coincidentally, Patrick Coburn, the Independent's correspondent, who is in Iraq now. And we were trying to get him on a cell phone, which was the source of our difficulty. But he has been writing really about a lot of the material you talk about in The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Mess in Iraq. John, why did you decide to write this book, and what is your thesis?
Well, as you know, Bob, as you mentioned, Sheldon Rampton and I wrote a book that came out in July of 2003 titled Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War on Iraq. Sheldon and I specialize in investigative reporting on propaganda campaigns, spin campaigns, PR campaigns that are organized and orchestrated by special interests, corporations, and governments to manage and manipulate public perception and policy. And ever since the terror attacks of 9/11, we'd been reporting on our PRWatch.org website at Center for Media and Democracy about how the Bush administration and corporate and right-wing interests immediately began exploiting the terror attacks for their own ideological and profit-making purposes. And one of the clearest and unfortunately most painful examples of this is the sell job that the administration launched to go to war against Iraq. What really began us on the second book is the first book, because when we got a call in March of 2003, it was around March 20th, the day that the U.S. invaded Iraq, from our editor, Mitch Horowitz at Penguin. He said, look, you guys and others have been reporting about how the arguments for this war are facetious. You know, it's clear that there are no links between Saddam and 9/11. There are no links between Saddam and al-Qaeda. And there's probably no active weapons of mass destruction program in Iraq. But most Americans believed all the propaganda, because not only did the highest levels of the Bush administration state this as fact and insinuate it, but of course our mainstream media echoed those lies and deceptions and censored out the peace movement, the critics, whether they came from street protests in Champaign-Urbana or from a distinguished career in the CIA or the State Department or the Pentagon. Critics of the war were censored out. And so the American public believed the propaganda. We went to war. And now, you know, we're 3 years later, and we can see what happens when a nation is deceived into war. A lot of the information that was in our first book, Weapons of Mass Deception, has just been coming out in books by people like Frank Rich and Bob Woodward. Not that the information wasn't out there, but that it took an awful long time for mainstream media figures to really come to grips with what we and other, frankly, left and liberal journalists knew way back before the war began, that this was a sell job by an administration ideologically committed to war. In our second book, we look at the effects of going to war based on propaganda, and also at how the propaganda is continuing, because, you know, what's so frightening, I think, is that while now even the White House in its finer, more honest moments admits no connection between Saddam and 9/11, no connection between Saddam and al-Qaeda, absolutely no weapons of mass destruction, polls show that maybe half of the American public still believes the propaganda. And the neoconservatives this summer, people like James Woolsey and William Kristol and Newt Gingrich and other founders of the Project for a New American Century, tried very hard to convince America that when Israel was bombing Lebanon, we should see this as our war, as William Kristol put it, and begin attacking Syria and Iran. So the situation is that the propaganda that lied us into this war is continuing. The mainstream media is still doing a lousy job of standing up to the Bush administration. And now, of course, we're just 2 days away from an election where the public is making it clear in polls that Iraq is their dominant concern. It's possible that the Democrats will win one or both houses on Tuesday. And yet it's a bizarre situation because the Democrats, the opposition party, are not yet, and we'll see if they are at any point soon, united around what most of the public now supports, getting U.S. troops out of Iraq today or within the next year.
Our guest today on Media Matters is John Stauber, the co-author of the Sheldon Rampton of the brand new book, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damned Lies, and the Mess in Iraq, published by Torture Penguin. Just came out within the last few weeks, if I'm not mistaken, right, John?
Yeah, it came out in late September.
Late September, yes. Yeah, so it's just about a month old. A terrific new book, and John Stauber has been our guest many times on Media Matters when he's had other books or when he's been passing through town. He is the founder of, or co-founder and director of the Center for Media and Democracy based up in Madison, Wisconsin, doing tremendous work on a variety of issues around propaganda, public relations. We had one of his fellow workers at the center on our program just last week, Diane Farsetta, who's been leading the work on fake news that's been on commercial broadcasting. That's out of John's shop up in Madison. It is a pleasure to have John here. If you want to call in with questions or comments for John Stauber at Media Matters, the phone number 333-9455, our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. John Stauber, you mentioned that with the election 2 days away, this war is not very popular with anyone. And the number of people who think this war was a smart idea and should be executed, continued, is dwindling by the days. I think you know just this weekend it came out that the Army Times, Navy Times, and Air Force Times, the trade press of the military in this country, in an unprecedented gesture, did a joint editorial calling for Donald Rumsfeld to be removed as Secretary of Defense, basically saying that this administration, in short, has lost the confidence of the military. Which is really unprecedented. You said that the American people still are sort of getting a deluge of propaganda about the war, yet they seem to be turning against the war. What do you think is missing in the media diet? What is going on in Iraq from your research that most Americans are not being exposed to in the news media?
Well, it's very interesting. You know this better than I do, Bob, to take a look at mainstream media in the U.S. and how they deliver the news, what they tend to highlight, who they deliver as commentators on the news. And I think one thing that's interesting is that often the information that we most need is somewhere in the mainstream media. It might be on a network broadcast. It might be on the Los Angeles Times or the New York Times. But it's a question of how the information is treated, how the information is played, how the mainstream media deals with the facts, and what they choose to really emphasize and investigate, and what they choose to ignore. So, for instance, just a few weeks ago, we saw this very important study come out in the top British medical journal, The Lancet. And it was a follow-up to a study we write about at length in The Best War Ever, overseen by Johns Hopkins researchers. Just excellent science, lauded across the board by scientists and epidemiologists, putting at about 655,000 dead the number of people who've died violent or who've died in Iraq since the U.S. invasion, who probably wouldn't have been dead had the U.S. not invaded. This is stunning, 655,000 dead. It could even be higher than that, but that's the best estimate right now. You know, if Iraq had accused the United States of threatening its interests and decided to invade to liberate us from a dictator, and we were had suffered similar casualties because of our much higher population of 300 million people, we'd be looking at over 7 million dead Americans. I mean, the war has been such an unbelievable disaster. And immediately after Saddam fell, of course, there was that period of brief euphoria before reality began to set in. But one thing that an awful lot of people have been saying, even critics of the war as well, at least they're better off than they were under Saddam, I think the reality is now, and you see this in reports from Iraqi civilians on blogs, that the situation in Iraq is worse than it's ever been over the last 10 years under even a brutal, vicious dictator like Saddam. What's happening is that the press isn't really bringing home to the American people the reality of the war. And let me back way up and even point to the fact that as recently as July, a Harris survey showed that one out of two Americans believe that the weapons of mass destruction, which were the major argument for the war against Iraq, were actually found by the U.S. So, you know, it's a little hard to emphasize just how badly the mainstream media is covering the war when half of the people in the United States think that the weapons of mass destruction were found. You would think that the mainstream media would step up, take some responsibility for this, really make that a point to try to educate the half of us who believe this incredible falsehood. Because how can we even begin to have a debate in this country about Iraq, about what we need to do, when half of the people believe that weapons of mass destruction were found in Iraq, and that satisfies the major rationale for the war?
John Stauber, our guest today on Media Matters. John Stauber, along with Sheldon Rampton, authors of the brand new book, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Mess in Iraq. John, you mentioned the Lancet study by Johns Hopkins and scholars from their medical school that estimates 655,000 people have died in Iraq since the invasion who would not have died had the war not taken place, the invasion and occupation not taken place. And what's interesting, you started to talk about the media coverage of it. It got some coverage, but that story has not seemed to have much in the way of legs, as they say in newsrooms.
Exactly. It played in my edition here in the Midwest of the New York Times, I think on either page 14 or 16, which is just stunning in and of itself, because this study should have been the number one news story of the day in the United States. And then when the media asked President Bush what he thought of the study, he just dismissed it out of hand and said it's not credible. To my knowledge, there was no further follow-up of this. The news media just let this story languish. It came under the report, the study, of course, came under withering attack from right-wingers, but they didn't lay a glove on the essence of the study, and the scientific community has lauded and embraced the study, and I'm sure it's played very differently in the international press. So what the news media here, you know, does is it creates a total false sense of reality among the American public and even American opinion leaders by not reporting critical information in the way it should be reported. This is done consistently, and you ask yourself, why? What's wrong here? You know, why can't, for instance, a newspaper like the New York Times, the paper of record, a paper that should be so mortified at the way it was used by Judith Miller, one of its former quote-unquote star reporters, to hype and sell the war? Why can't the New York Times recognize the significance of this report and give it the attention it deserves? Because if a paper of the stature of the New York Times decides to really take important information and give it maximum attention and look at it, it gets picked up. It gets bounced. But it's almost as if, and of course there isn't, but it's almost as if there's a meeting every day and mainstream media gathers around the table and says, okay, you know, what's our take on this? How are we going to handle this absolutely groundbreaking and very disturbing information out of Iraq of the huge, huge number of dead? Oh, let's just ignore it.
Our guest, John Stauber, co-author with Sheldon Rampton of The Best War Ever. You're listening to Media Matters on WILL AM 580. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're coming to you live. So we do have phone lines open at 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to that toll-free line right now. Virginia, you're on the air with John Stauber.
Hi, John. Hi, Bob. Thanks for the show.
Of course.
Well, there are so many things to talk about. But about the mainstream media, I don't even know where to begin. It's so frustrating to see what the corporate media is doing. But anyway, I wanted to talk about the situation in Iraq. I'm not sure if John is the right person. I don't know, maybe Patrick would have answered more about the current situation. But anyway, I will ask. I mean, we know that southern Iraq is more or less under the Shia militia control today. I mean, for example, that Iran-funded Badr Brigade and Muqtadir Sadr's Mehdi army, you know, is in control. But could you please tell us a little bit more about what's really going on in Baghdad, I mean, outside of Bin Laden? I mean, who is really in control of Baghdad after Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani has already, you know, sort of given up?
Well, you're right. I'm not actually the best person to address that. Patrick Coburn would be excellent because he's in Iraq right now, but unfortunately communication lines didn't make that possible. Sheldon and I are really experts on investigating propaganda, and neither of us have traveled to Baghdad. But since I'm the guest today, let me just respond a little bit to that as best I can. I think that one thing we have to realize is that the United States has managed to carry out policies that have put in place a government that, as Zbigniew Brzezinski pointed out this summer, really only governs within the green zone. I think
What is the green zone, John?
Well, the green zone is essentially a U.S. military encampment in Baghdad. And it's incredibly fortified, heavily surrounded, and anyone who wants to feel somewhat safe in Iraq had better be inside that green zone. Of course, we've seen that even life inside the green zone isn't necessarily that safe. Mortar shells are lobbed in there. Paul Bremer was almost taken out, Wolfowitz, rather, was almost taken out some years ago by mortar shells lobbed into the green zone. So I think, you know, one of the real myths right now in the mainstream media that's really being perpetrated is this idea that no one really has any idea of how the United States would begin to extricate the occupation troops out of Iraq. And I think that's completely false. And last July, Zbigniew Brzezinski, the Cold Warrior who's held numerous positions in democratic governments, stated a very clean and simple strategy for extricating the U.S. from Iraq. He said, look, here's what we need to do. We need to, first of all, set a date and say we're removing our troops, our occupation troops, as of this date. He said, then we need to pull together the real political forces within Iraq, and they probably don't include many Iraqis inside the green zone because Iraq is a mess, but there are definitely people with power in Iraq outside the green zone. He said when the United States leaves, whoever does end up governing Iraq is going to come from outside the green zone. He said what we need to do then is we need to meet with Syria, meet with Iran, and of course the Bush administration won't even talk directly with either of those governments. We have to pull together the leadership from within Iraq and the neighboring countries, and our goal has to be stability. He said when the United States leaves Iraq, probably most of the politicians inside the green zone are going to come along because most of them, in his opinion, Zbigniew Brzezinski, really don't have much support in the real Iraq. So when you ask, who's in charge of Baghdad, I think the answer probably is everyone and no one. Baghdad seems to be, just from my conversations with journalists who've been there and reading the news like you, seems to be just spiraling more and more into chaos. But it was very interesting this past week to see the Iraqi government say to the United States, you stand down in Baghdad, you shut down these checkpoints, you back off.
Our guest today, John Stauber, co-author of the brand new book, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Mess in Iraq. He co-authored it with Sheldon Rampton, with whom he founded the Center for Media and Democracy in Madison, Wisconsin. What's your website for that, John?
PRWatch.org is our website, Bob. And then we also have a website just for the book, which is thebestwarever.com.
We've got a few callers patiently waiting to talk to John Stauber. If you'd like to join them, the phone number here, 333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 1, Champagne, you're on the air with John Stauber.
Yes, it's a distinct honor. I've known of you since Toxic Sludge Is Good For You. So you've got a long legacy of, and you're the one who's gotten me so interested in watching how reality is manufactured by Hilton and Knowles and Boz and all of the other giant PR firms in Washington, D.C. that seem to radiate Wag the Dog.
Well, Burson Marsteller, who really inspired Sheldon and me to write that book and do the work we do, for instance, had a contract, maybe still does, this is also secretive, with Ahmed Chalabi's Iraqi National Congress, an organization we can talk about a little later, perhaps.
I do have a question. The illustrations of the deviousness of the public relations industry and working with this administration are legendary, and the collusion with the corporate media is pretty obvious. But, of course, it's not obvious to 50% or more of the citizens in the United States. So my question is, what are some of your proposed solutions? And maybe these are the same solutions that other people have answered. And one of the things maybe that might figure in what you're about to say is David Geffen is trying to rake together money to buy the Los Angeles Times, with just one major news reporting organ like that, to suddenly change course and offer up the truth, would that not begin to compel relentlessly when they would get the scoop and more people would be informed? One major newspaper reporting organ, like the Philadelphia Inquirer, if it could ever be pried loose from its bonds, would that not be a tipping point because corporations follow one another? They see who's making the best profit share and selling the most papers or the most advertising space. I'll take my answer off the air.
Oh, thank you very much. John Stauber is buying up a major newspaper and having it do a better job, one of the ways out of this thing?
Well, I think anything that can be done to really restore a sense of integrity in journalism in the mainstream media, whether we're talking about the big papers in the U.S. like the L.A. Times, Washington Post, New York Times, whether we're talking about the major networks or the cable broadcasters, is extremely important and would be a good step. What we've seen at the Center for Media and Democracy, of course, is just the opposite. While there certainly are some very good mainstream journalists, they tend to be frustrated. They tend to be on a short leash. They look around. They see the money for their newsrooms and their reporting disappearing. As we've revealed in our TV fake news report, what's happening in TV networks and TV stations across the country, the commercial TV, is that even the news itself is being replaced with news, what looks like news stories that are produced by PR people working for major corporations. And then the news directors actually air them as if they were real reporting, committing plagiarism, destroying real reporting, and deceiving the audience into thinking this is news. So it's really hard to overemphasize how low mainstream media has sunk, and it continues to trend downward. Of course, anything that might occur in mainstream media that would elevate standards of ethics and integrity and just simple journalism 101 and, you know, create a backbone among media to really challenge government and corporate propaganda would be very important. I think that the problem here in the United States can almost be reduced to something this simple. This is really not new, but it's really hit me again as I've been out on the road for the last month with the best war ever. I mean, the problem essentially is this, that we have a news media in the United States, a mainstream media, that runs from moderate conservative all the way to dangerously wacko far right. The information that most people aren't getting is a left point of view, a dissenting point of view, a pro-labor point of view, a pro-environment point of view, a progressive point of view. If you look at this war, it could never have happened had the mainstream media simply done, let's use a phrase, fair and balanced reporting, where, sure, okay, have on the people who are absolute advocates for the war, like William Kristol, like James Woolsey, like Newt Gingrich, like all the other neocons who advocated so much for this war. But then also let's have on the voices who are saying this war would be a disaster. Those voices were out there, but they weren't heard. There were even public relations efforts by the anti-war movement to get those people into the talk shows. They weren't allowed. Move On had to try to buy ads on the major TV networks to get a point, get across the anti-war position. Those ads weren't run. We have a corporate media that censors out the critics of corporations and government from the left. And I say to my right-wing and conservative friends, and I've got a lot of them here in Wisconsin, and I grew up in a very conservative family, you know, you may not like what people on the left have to say. You may not like reading investigative reporting by left and liberal journalists, but the public needs the entire spectrum of information and opinion if we're going to make correct decisions. So that's, in many ways, the challenge. And as anyone who listens to this show knows, there are very specific reforms that we need to fight for and win before we begin to see any real fundamental improvement in mainstream media reporting.
John Stauber, our guest today on Media Matters. John is the co-author of Sheldon Rampton of The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Mess in Iraq. Before we go back to the phone lines, John, I want you to help me work on something because you are, I think, one of the great experts at propaganda, war propaganda, especially around this war in the United States. This is your second book on the subject with Sheldon Rampton. You know, when the war began, there were, sort of, as you mentioned, the claims that the government gave to justify the war and to get popular support for the war were the claims that Saddam was connected to 9/11 somehow, or that he was connected to al-Qaeda, or most important, for legal reasons, that he possessed weapons of mass destruction that were an imminent threat to us. All of those blew up like a trick cigar once we got over there.
Right.
Then the big claim was that we were there for democracy. And, you know, now that has completely, I mean, the Lancet study, if we were there for democracy, obviously, we'd be very concerned about Iraqi casualties, not trying to put it under the rug. And all the evidence is that the vast majority of Iraqis very badly want the United States to leave the country. Then the argument was, well, they were better off under Saddam, even if it is a hellhole now. And even that one isn't holding up especially well. It seems like there's really not much left except that it'll look bad for us to have to leave the country defeated. I mean, is that what we're reduced to, is the final straw here?
I think there's a lot of truth to that, Bob. And it's going to be interesting on Tuesday if, as pundits predict,
the Democratic Party does manage to win the House of Representatives, it's going to be incumbent on the Democrats to take more ownership of this war. You know, their strategy so far has been to attack and criticize the administration's handling of the war, but there's not unity among the Democrats as to what needs to be done. It looks to me like the public is way out in front of both political parties, surprise, surprise. And even with so many in the public still fooled about issues like ties to Al-Qaeda or weapons of mass destruction, still 55% of the American public, according to the most recent New York Times survey, wants the U.S. troops out of there either immediately or within the next year. I think the tendency among the Democrats, if they take the Congress, is going to be, gee, you know, we don't want to get tagged as losing Iraq. We don't want to end up, you know, as the party that lost Iraq. We want to get somebody elected in 08. Maybe we should just continue to criticize the president, drag our feet, and, you know, and take it from there. So I think what's really incumbent upon those of us who oppose the war, whether we opposed the war before it was launched or whether we've come to realize that we were deceived and sold a bill of goods, and that as the national intelligence estimate, the best information out of our intelligence agencies here in the United States said recently, not only did the attack on Iraq increase terrorism and create a breeding ground for terrorism, the longer U.S. troops are occupying Iraq, the worse the terrorism gets. So clearly, the public wants this war ended. The best intelligence information is, hey, you want to fight terrorism, end the U.S. occupation. People like Zbigniew Brzezinski can articulate the ways out. But now it's going to become a situation where neither political party wants to have losing Iraq, quote-unquote, stuck on their back. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens after Tuesday.
Well, the big news today, of course, is Saddam Hussein has now been sentenced to death for his participation in mass murder in 1982. Tremendous coincidence, I guess, that it happened just 2 days before the U.S. Election. What's your take on this whole Saddam Hussein trial and how that's fit into the U.S. mission in Iraq?
Well, I laugh because, of course, it's no coincidence at all that Saddam Hussein was sentenced to death the Sunday before an election in the United States in which Iraq is the major issue. And this is something that was clearly timelined by the U.S., and I think it was timelined this way because it was thought this would give some sort of boost to Republicans. You know, there have been a number of points after the invasion where public opinion actually showed an increase in support for the Bush war. Such as when Saddam Hussein was captured and when Zarqawi was killed. So, you know, for months now, this date today has been set for the day of Saddam's sentencing. And I think it was picked so that Monday's headlines out of Iraq will include Saddam sentenced to death. I think it's a ploy. It's a ploy that's going to benefit pro-Bush candidates, pro-war candidates. I really doubt it. I think at one time it may have appeared that way, but I think the floor has fallen out for this administration regarding the war. I think if the Democrats actually were united around something as simple as Zbigniew Brzezinski's plan for ending the occupation and getting out and stressing creating a secure Iraq and a stable Iraq, that the Democrats would be in a position to win very big on Tuesday.
As it is, the public is making clear in surveys that they want this war ended.
Our guest, John Stauber, you're listening to Media Matters. John Stauber, along with Sheldon Rampton, authors of the brand new book, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Mess in Iraq. Phone number here, we have time for a couple more callers, 333-9455, the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines right now, if we can. Line 2, Champaign County, you're on the air with John Stauber.
Hi. Yeah, the trial's interesting in that Anfal is not the trial that the issue he's condemned for, because then U.S. complicity might actually bubble up somehow. I don't know if I can expect that. I suppose they'll probably try to hang him before other evidence is offered.
Just interrupt for a second. I think your point is excellent. Of course, Saddam Hussein, most listeners probably know this, but was a huge ally and friend of Republican administrations in the U.S. through the 80s until he made the fatal mistake of thinking he was such a good friend he could just take over the Kuwaiti oil fields. And up to that point, the biggest problem of the previous Bush administration was how to whitewash this brutal dictator as an ally of the United States.
I was prompted to call because of the yellow cake thing. It's such a transparent forgery, and I just wonder if anybody really knows who forged it at this point. Our congressional representative says he voted for the war because of secret evidence, and I'm pretty sure it's the yellow cake story, which is so patently ridiculous from the get-go, you don't even need to look at the forgery because, you know, it's an international consortium that mines the yellow cake in Niger. But you mentioned Woolsey. He's particularly a piece of work, and I wonder if you spend some time in the book talking about how he's being such a spokesman for the war, even though he served in 2 Republican and 2 Democratic administrations. He's seen as the Democrat CIA director for Clinton, who was in booster for the war, Nonpareil. He was working with a PR firm, if I recall correctly, and they said he wasn't working on the issues that I think it was the INC. Well, you can clarify right. that for me. But he was taking money from a company that was right. benefiting greatly from that largesse. And I wish you would go after him a bit. And I don't know what you want to say about the other one. Thanks a lot. And
thank you.
We hope your book tour brings you close by Champaign or Banner or Central Illinois sometime soon. Thank
you. Thanks very much. We have an entire chapter in The Best War Ever titled The Plame Game that looks at this whole issue of how in January of 2003, of course, George Bush told a major falsehood in his State of the Union address claiming that the U.S. had information that they'd gotten from Britain that Saddam was looking for uranium from Africa. As you point out, there were numerous investigations by numerous agencies from numerous governments previous to Bush's lie in the 2003 State of the Union that completely debunked this. It was based on a forgery, an outrageously bad forgery. Joseph Wilson, former U.S. ambassador, was sent to Africa, one of a number of people who personally investigated it, found out nothing there. And what I think is interesting is that in the summer of 2003, shortly after the U.S. invasion, the administration really dropped the crisis management ball on handling this. Some of its top spinmeisters, such as Ari Fleischer, Karen Hughes, and Tory Clark, had all jumped ship in June of 2003, and Joe Wilson was coming out blowing the whistle on this. Of course, that eventually led to the vice president's chief of staff being indicted. And I remember an August news conference in 2003 where, for the first time, it seemed, the White House press was standing up to the lies that sold the war. And President Bush was forced to answer this question of, who's responsible for this? And he just said something like, I stand behind anything the administration says. And I thought, great, here comes the follow-up. This is a pack of hungry dogs now in the White House press corps. Let's see who asked the next question. All right, did you know it was a lie at the time, and why did you tell it? And if you didn't, it was so obviously false, how did it make it into the State of the Union? There was no follow-up. The president took off for vacation in Texas, and all the other false assertions that were the basis for the war, 100% of those assertions being false, the mainstream media just dropped the ball. Who does the mainstream media turn to, you know, for analysis when you turn on TV? They turn to people like the man you mentioned, James Woolsey, a former head of the CIA. James Woolsey was also one of the founding members of Project for a New American Century, and we write about them in both Weapons of Mass Deception and The Best War Ever. This is the think tank formed by Weekly Standard editor William Kristol back in the late 90s that really became not just a lobbyist for the war and an embracer of Ahmed Chalabi and the Iraqi National Congress, the CIA front group we write about, but the Project for a New American Century really outlined, and you can just, you know, Google them and find these documents, the Bush foreign policy, that we would pursue a policy of empire. And right away, 9/11, that was the green light for these PNAC people now inside the administration, like Wolfowitz, Rumsfeld, and Cheney, all of whom were founding members of the Project for a New American Century, to attack Iraq. James Woolsey, as you point out, became a paid lobbyist for the Iraqi National Congress. His law firm in Washington represented the Iraqi National Congress. This was an organization created with CIA money through a PR firm called the Rendon Group in the early 90s, and it provided most of the defectors who were the basis for most of the stories, 100% of them completely false, of people who had supposed firsthand knowledge of Saddam's nuclear weapons and Saddam's ties to Al-Qaeda and Saddam's ties to 9/11. So all this information that's so critical is the sort of information that the mainstream media is ignoring, that the public isn't getting. But you're absolutely right. James Woolsey, you turn on TV and there he is as a commentator, just described as a ex-CIA director, when he's been a lobbyist for attacking Iraq and he's making money out of it by representing a CIA front group that's providing the defectors that have misled us into the war.
John Stauber, our guest today, Media Matters. We have three callers patiently waiting. I'm going to ask the callers to be brief, and John, you try to be brief too.
I'll try.
Yeah, I know. John Stauber, of course, author of the brand new book, The Best War Ever. Let's go right now to Line 1, Portland, Oregon. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Stauber, I'm going to ask you to be a historian from the future for a moment. You know, if you look back at the Vietnam War, there was huge public opposition, and the war continued for years. Yep. After that became a major media story. And here, you know, there have been protests, but not nearly the same media coverage as we know it's been biased actually in favor of the war. So I'm curious how 30 years from now we'll be looking back on this. Thanks for the call. Bye.
Well, I think that depends on what happens after Tuesday's election. I think what is going to happen Tuesday is probably the Democrats are going to gain back at least one House. If they do that, it's going to be because of just fundamental public opposition to the war. And then the question is, can the anti-war movement reignite itself and become a major player and force the Democrats and Republicans to end this war, end the U.S. occupation? That'll be the question, because this war, if it were up to the people holding political office today, would just go on and on and on indefinitely like Vietnam did.
Let's go back to the phone lines again. Line 4, Mighty Farina, you're back on the air with John Stauber.
Hey, thank you very much. My compliments on your part in the Moyers Net at Risk program a couple weeks ago.
Oh, thank you.
And it's Media Matters is like the whole wheat bread of radio talk shows. it's unbelievable how the Bush administration has damaged the world, and it's the title of this show, Media Matters, to expose the truth, and that's my comment for today. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, John. I guess all you have to do is say, boy, that's a smart caller.
Thumbs up.
All right, very good. Let's go back to our final caller now, then. Line 3, Spring Bay, you're on the air with John Stauber.
Good afternoon. Ditto to that last caller. Well, I think it's oil, oil, oil. I'm a peak oil guy, and I'll bet you a dollar to a dime that Dick Cheney heard at his energy conference when they first took office that we were peaking in oil and we had to go out and get some. I'll get off and hang on and listen to your answer. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much. John, is that the real reason?
I think you're absolutely right. It is all about oil. This is Iraq, after all. And again, how did the mainstream media treat this argument? Some of the biggest ridicule of critics of the war were critics of the war who pointed out, oh, this is a war about oil. I think one thing history will show when we look back, as the first of those three callers said, is indeed what was really driving this war was the U.S. desire to control oil in the Middle East.
John, we've only got a couple of minutes left, and one issue I want to get to is something you cover and I know really closely. A big scandal emerged roughly a year ago when it came out that the United States government was bribing journalists in Iraq and using very sophisticated and expensive PR budgets to sort of doctor what was supposed to be the Iraqi free press.
Right.
I think that story fell out of the news very quickly, too. And it's an extraordinary statement about how committed we were to democracy in that country. What happened there, and what was the meaning of that?
Yeah, all people need to do to really get to the heart of this, if you're online, is Google Lincoln Group. This PR firm that was started by Republican operatives not only was, but is being paid with our tax dollars to create fake news about Iraq and pay Iraqi media to broadcast and run these stories. And when that first broke, it was December of 2005, people at the highest levels of the Bush administration, right up to Rumsfeld, said, oh, no, this can't be. We're going to look into this. Rumsfeld actually told Charlie Rose in an interview a little later that the practice had been stopped. Then he was corrected. The practice is ongoing, and if anything, it's expanding. And just this past week, the Pentagon announced that it was pumping up a campaign to better manage media coverage in and outside of Iraq.
Now, John, we've only got a few seconds left, or 30 seconds or so. I mean, no Iraqi living in that country, you know, with people getting killed all the time, falling apart, possibly can fall for this stuff, can they?
No, and I think that's one of the most important points we make in The Best War Ever, that this propaganda really isn't about changing minds inside Iraq. Those people can see what's going on. It's about managing public opinion in the United States.
John, I hear the band tuning up in the background. That means they want me to clear out of the studio so Tavis Smiley can come in. Our guest today on Media Matters has been John Stauber, co-author of The Best War Ever, Lies, Damned Lies, and the Mess in Iraq. Brand new book he's written with Sheldon Rampton, just out from Tarcher Penguin. John Stauber lives in Madison, founder and co-director of the Center for Media and Democracy. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Bob.
Great for having you. My name's Bob McChesney. I'll be back in 167 hours with another guest taking up the issues of the day. Be sure you all go vote on Tuesday. I want to thank Brett Polson, my engineer, and, of course, Andrew Boyle, the producer. Thank you, Andrew. See you all next week.